What's going on? Good Thursday, everybody. Welcome into the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. I am Radio's Chase McCabe, and he is Radio's Ryan Porath. Ryan, what's up?
What's up, Chaser? How are you on this fine Thursday?
I'm feeling good. I just told Marquise I am ready to go. I got my pep in my step. That's 2 days in a row, so I'm feeling wonderful.
You ate your Wheaties this morning?
No, I haven't eaten yet. I've just had a lot of coffee, and that helps.
Yeah.
They get you going early in the morning.
I still have never had a coffee in my life.
Nothing surprises me with you anymore.
There's a legitimate reason behind it because I can't drink caffeine. And if I can't drink caffeine, then what's the point of coffee?
Yeah, I mean the only reason I drink coffee is just to get going in the mornings. And I mean I never drank coffee growing up or even really much in college. When I started working mornings and doing overnights and all that, that's when I started drinking coffee. But that's not why we're here to talk. We're here to talk sports. Marquise Munson is back at the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. I feel like, Ryan, that every day this week we have opened the show with some sort of update on Jadeveon Clowney. I think we need like a sounder, Clowney watch, you know, something like that. Because we are certainly on Clowney watch here in Nashville, but not really too much to report after yesterday. You know, we saw him working out and saw the news story that that Fox 26 did on him in Houston. But Jeremy Fowler of ESPN has been, of course, all over the airwaves and did have an update on the latest with Jadeveon Clowney.
Well, his plan is to continue to chill and wait to sign because multiple teams have tried to sign him. The Cleveland Browns thought they had a deal about a month ago. Seattle Seahawks tried multiple times. Tennessee Titans. It's my understanding that Clowney had a huge number. These teams were not willing to hit it. They didn't consider him a top five type pass rusher right now. But Clowney had that core muscle surgery earlier in the offseason, so he figures, let's wait a little bit, get completely healthy, and then when I can go in a team facility and visit, they can see how healthy I am and see that I'm the freak athlete I've always been, and then everything will be good and the money will be there. That's at least one option I'm hearing Clowney has considered.
Yeah, okay. Let me explain something to you, Jadeveon. You are not going to get $20 million a year. If that's your number, then you just need to forget it because you're not going to play. I mean, if that's what you want, you're not going to play this year. I don't care if he thinks he's healthy and a freak athlete and top five, whatever, all that stuff. If the teams don't think that, even if he comes in their facility and just wows them on a practice field with no one else around, they're still not going to pay him that kind of money. So to me, it's just idiotic in a pipe dream to even think that. You have to look at this now. Could you get a multi-year deal? Maybe. But I think he's better off doing another one-year prove-it deal, play for $13 million or $15 million or whatever. I mean, $15 million is no chunk change. I mean, that's not bad at all. Play for that and then try and get your money next year. But well, I just don't see a team taking a chance on a long-term big money deal.
No, that would have happened. If that were to have happened with Jadeveon Clowney, it would have happened in March. Look, you bring up the number $20 million. That ship has already sailed. You know, we're already hearing that.
Does he know that?
Well, I mean, we're hearing reports, Chase, of his camp saying that the asking price went down to 17. And
yeah, but now we're hearing that, you know, he wants to wait and get in front of teams. I take that as, he wants to try and sell himself for even
he's
more.
He's looking to get a contract, and we all know that he has to wait until he can take a physical with these teams to get a contract. I don't think he's waiting around to showcase the team so that he can get the $20 million. I think he's waiting around to showcase the teams that he can actually be an effective pass rusher in this league, that he can actually be healthy, and that someone's investment, even if it's 13, 14, or 15 million, is going to be a worthy cause. I don't think him waiting around is him saying, oh, well, I can still get 20 million. By all reports in the last month, he has backed down from the 20 million asking price that he started with.
Yeah, I mean, you might be right, but the last few days, it just feels. And him saying that he's fine waiting around, I mean, do you really buy that? I mean, I guess if he thinks he can get more than whatever's reported, then sure. But I don't think
he's waiting around for more. I think he's simply waiting around so that he can show teams that he's healthy, you know? Yeah.
Well, look, the physical thing has definitely halted this process.
Right.
There's no doubt. I mean, that teams, even though they've made offers, I think there has to be a certain number that you're willing to give up without seeing him. I mean, but, you know, I use the car analogy. You don't buy a car without test driving it. So I think that the teams are kind of looking at it from that standpoint, and I don't blame them. I mean, the core surgery, whatever that it was that he had, I mean, that's a concern, plus all the injuries that he's had in his career. So
I think that's part of the reason why he did the interview and the workout in front of Fox 26 in Houston. I think that's the exact reason for it, to help show teams that he is on the mend and is healthy. You know, his health is really one of the biggest question marks. Health and consistency are the two biggest question marks with Jadeveon Clowney. And the health is a primary one. And if he can show on video that he's healthy and can be that, quote, freak athlete that Jeremy Fowler mentioned in that clip that we played, then, you know, maybe teams are going to be more willing to jump at signing Clowney once they can get the physical done. And that is the key in all this.
Yeah.
And, well, you know, the NFL is reaching out to teams. There was the report yesterday that they've reached out to teams about potentially reopening facilities, and that the first phase of the reopening process could start on May 15th, a week from tomorrow. So fingers crossed on that. But, you know, who knows if the physical aspect could start when phase one starts. I would say either phase one or two, you know, you might be able to make that happen.
Yeah. No, and look, that's positive. Tonight is the schedule release, which we will get into a little bit more later in the hour. But, you know, it would appear that things could be moving in the right direction for the NFL, even though nothing has really stopped for them. Like, who are we kidding? They've been... That's the league we've been talking about the most, because they've actually had things going on. But another organization that is looking ahead and trying to figure out what the fall is going to look like would be the NCAA and college football. Now, James Franklin, who is the head coach at Penn State, of course, many of you remember him and his time here at Vanderbilt as their head coach. You know, he is never short on words. He is always willing to talk. That was one thing that we really liked about him when he was here. But he talked to ESPN's Heather Denich and has done various interviews, or Heather Denich has this article, I should say, but he's done various interviews, and he thinks, and this is kind of a long clip, but he thinks that there is a chance college football starts in conferences, even if not all the schools are ready to go, that they might go ahead and start. Here's James Franklin.
I had another coach in the league call me yesterday, and that's what he was kind of recommending, that the Big Ten kind of come out and say, hey, this needs to be consistent across the Big Ten. And I said, I just don't think that's going to work. It either needs to be national or not at all. But I just don't see how that's going to work. For example, say you have six schools in your conference or eight schools in your conference that all are able to open and get going, and there's one or two or whatever the number is that can't. Are you going to penalize all these schools not being able to open? So for example, with the Big Ten, say we have two or three schools that at the end of the season are part of the playoff conversation. Well, the schools that we're competing against in other conferences, you know, they were able to open before we were, and the Big Ten held back certain schools for a school that maybe isn't a hot spot in our conference. So it's not ideal. I think we all grew up in an NCAA that tried as much as they possibly could to level the playing field, and this would be one of those things. But I just don't see how that's going to happen with climate differences. And Arizona is going to be very different than New Jersey. And Florida is going to be very different than Maryland, and so on and so forth. So, yeah, I don't think you're going to like it. And I don't think, you know, people are going to be happy about it. But I think in reality, I don't see how you're going to be able to hold up 10 or 12 schools in one conference from two states that are opening up a month later. And I think that's the same thing by conferences. I don't think you can penalize one conference, you know, from opening because another conference is opening way ahead. I think there's got to be some type of guidelines nationally from the NCAA that making sure that conferences aren't pushing to open earlier than they should. But I think if you get into it any more than that, then I think you're going to do more damage than you're going to do good.
Penn State football coach James Franklin. Now, excuse me if I come off as a little bit of a cynic. I don't mean to be, but sometimes I just am. I hear that, and I hear what he's saying. I don't think he's all the way wrong, but I also hear the football coach of a team that has had success and they're probably going to be maybe top three or so in their conference. And you never know what's going to happen over the course of a season. Got to deal with Ohio State, Minnesota, who knows what Michigan is. But I kind of hear a little bit of that. And so he doesn't want some other school, you know, I'll use Rutgers as an example, holding him back and his program back from trying to get to the college football playoffs. So I hear a little bit of just talking about what's going on, but I also hear some football coach.
No, I think you're definitely on to something there. Not only the Rutgers example, because Rutgers, of all the Big Ten schools, is right in the heart of all the coronavirus, the different level that the New York area is facing with this. Rutgers is right in the heat of that in northern New Jersey. So I totally see where you're going with that. And to add to that, you know, the Ohio governor came out yesterday and said, I don't know if we're going to be able to play football this fall. And, you know, I think anybody saying that they know one way or the other is just guessing at this point. So to your point, not only could James Franklin be trying to play the Rutgers card of, well, if Rutgers can't open classes, then why hold the rest of the Big Ten back? I think he's also saying that if, say, Ohio State or Michigan weren't able to play football this fall, where Penn State could have a clear avenue to a big season if Ohio State or Michigan or both didn't play in 2020. So I definitely think he's going down that road that you've brought up. I also think James Franklin is right in a certain instance, and I can expound further after the break.
Ooh, we call that a tease in the business. We call that a big tease. Yeah, so we will do that. I agree with you. I'm not saying that James Franklin doesn't care or anything like that. I know he does, and I know that he knows there is a bigger picture here, but like I said, there's definitely some football coach in him that, you know, if Ohio State can't play, like, oh, okay, guess Ohio State can't play. It sucks to be them. That's kind of what I hear a little bit of that. But Ryan will expound upon his thought when we come back here on the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. During this time, Crown Royal and 102.5 The Game would like to raise a toast to our heroes who are serving on the front lines to protect our communities. Thank you for your sacrifice. You're the definition of true royalty. To submit your local hero, connect with us on social media or text us at 615-737-1025 or visit thegamenashville.com and tell us about your heroes. Then join us at 4 p.m. each weekday as we raise a toast to our heroes. Cheers. Crown Royal. Must be 21 or over to toast. Please drink responsibly. Welcome back into the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe and Ryan Porth. Marquise Munson is our producer. So Ryan, we were discussing James Franklin and his comments about college football, that if there are a couple schools in a conference in a specific area that they won't be ready to go on time, the entire conference shouldn't have to hold back to wait on them because it would hurt the conference as a whole. Don't think he's 100% wrong, but I also think he's, and maybe rightfully so, he's looking at his program and saying, well, you know, if Pennsylvania is going to be good to go, I mean, we're supposed to be pretty good. If Ohio State can't play, well, that stinks, but oh well, the show must go on. So I think there's a little bit of that, but you had a thought that you wanted to expound upon.
Well, here's where I thought James Franklin was correct in that clip that we played last segment, which was James Franklin saying that he feels like there needs to be something consistent from the NCAA. You know, James Franklin said it's all or nothing. The NCAA should come out and have a, you know, a protocol or whatever saying, you know, we can't just cherry pick different college football teams to play. Either all of them play or we can't play at all. And I think that's where a college football commissioner would be a benefit right now for this exact situation. Because I think James Franklin is right, and you can't always rely on Mark Emmert, the president of the NCAA, to do the right thing, because there are so many different layers to college football and college athletics compared to pro sports. And there are already a lot of layers to professional sports to try to start up again or start their season, whether it's the NHL and NBA or Major League Baseball or the NFL down the road. Major League Soccer. Also, like with college athletics, you have to determine at some point, probably here in the next 4 to 6 weeks, if it's going to be a prerequisite for schools to be open for classes on campus to play college football / athletics. I think you have to determine that in early June and not wait until late July to make that determination, because in late July, if you're going to have a college football season start on time, that's around the time that colleges and teams need to start practices and start training so that they're not out of shape by the first week of the college football season on Labor Day weekend. And if it is a prerequisite for schools to be open and they don't have a consistent rule across the NCAA that all Division I schools have to be open for this season to happen, then if they don't have that, then how many schools are going to be open for classes? What if you have all 14 SEC schools open for classes because the climate is more conducive down here versus, you know, only having 6 to 8 Big Ten schools being open because of the climate and because some of those states within the Big Ten conference are experiencing COVID a lot worse than some of the states in the South. So then what do you do? Like, does the Big Ten go forward with the 6 to 8 teams? Like, you know, I know James Franklin put in the percentages of 75% to 80%. So then you're probably talking 9 to 10, 11 Big Ten schools being open. But, okay, what if those 9, 10, or 11 Big Ten schools are open for class on campus in August and September, but the others that aren't open then open in October? Like, if Ohio State opens in October, does Ohio State just jump into the college football season kind of, you know, trying to catch a moving train? The other layer with fans, if schools are open, do students have to attend games because the schools are open? And it's a mess. It is a complete mess. But I agree with, because of all those different uncertainties, I agree with James Franklin in that the NCAA has to have something set in stone with these conferences that can be consistent, and you have this figured out ahead of time and you're not a dog chasing its tail come August.
But the NCAA is always a dog chasing its tail.
I know.
That's the problem.
That's why a college football commissioner right now would be fantastic.
Okay, so you...
Because then you're not relying on Mark Emmert to make the call on this, because we all know Mark Emmert is very wishy-washy when it comes to making the right call.
You have opened up a huge can of worms, and I'm glad that you did, because this is a road I'm willing to go down, because I've thought about this and we've talked a little bit about it on Darren Donick and Chase. It's come up a couple of times, but looking at things from how can a negative become a positive? Do we think that this situation, which is and I'm going to use the word global, but I'm meaning just college athletics and as its own little world, this doesn't cover just the SEC or the Big Ten or the ACC. This covers all of college football, Power Five, Group Five, or college sports, I should say. Covers everybody. This, to me, is the biggest example ever that they need a college commissioner, that they need somebody running, you know, that more than the NCAA, more than Mark Emmert, not having, you know, all these conference commissioners that, you know, well, the SEC does one thing, the Big Ten does another thing. I wonder if now we're going to finally get it. If they're going to get in a room and realize, or get on a Zoom and go, yeah, we need one voice. We need our Roger Goodell. We need our Adam Silver. I mean, we need somebody. And then you have the conference commissioners that, you know, are under whoever this person is. I'm with you, because it wouldn't solve everything. I mean, you're still going to have bickering and disagreements and stuff, but it would make things better, because look, you're going to have that situation that you just brought up with there are going to be some schools that are going to be on campus. The University of Tennessee announced plans to return yesterday,
mm-hmm.
that they plan to have students on campus this fall. And again, maybe I'm being a cynic, but the first thought that popped in my head was, well, we know why they're making that decision. I mean, I think college football has something to do with it. Maybe not everything, but I definitely believe that that is on the minds of some of these universities of, well, okay, if they're saying that we can't play without kids on campus, guess kids got to be on campus. Now, they're going to make sure it's safe. No doubt in my mind, they're going to make sure that it's safe. And if the CDC comes out and says, no way, no how, do kids need to be on your campus, then they won't be. But there are a lot of things driving these decisions, and it seems to always point back to college football, not to mention the other sports that would be affected.
Well, what you just mentioned with the CDC could change everything.
Yeah.
Everything within this conversation, especially if the NCAA determines that it's a prerequisite for schools to be open for classes, particularly on campus, to play college football or athletics as a whole. And if the CDC were to come out in June or July and say, you know, we don't want college class or college campuses to be open, you know, all schooling has to be done online, then we're going to see just how important college football is to the NCAA as a whole, because I could still see them saying, you know what, we need the college football season to save all of these other sports.
Yeah.
And
that's,
you know,
the hard part.
It's, you know, we talk about college football 98% of the time in these conversations, but the domino effect has almost a larger impact on the other sports, because, you know, we've already seen the University of Cincinnati come out and, you know, basically put an end to its men's soccer program. I honestly haven't seen if any other schools have come out and done anything similar, but I think there would be a lot of schools doing that with different programs if there wasn't a college football season. So, and then at that point, it takes 2, 3, 4, 5 years to recover from that. So it is a complete mess, and I am glad that I don't have to be in those rooms making decisions, because, like, if you're Greg Sankey and all 14 of your schools are open and you don't have anything definitive from the NCAA of prerequisites or all or nothing, if you're Greg Sankey and you see all 14 schools open, but you see the Big Ten only half full, let's say the Big 12, maybe 3/4 full, just all hypothetically speaking, then what do you do? Do you go forward with your football season and determine an SEC champion, even if, you know, at some point the college football playoff committee comes out and says, you know, it's not a fair season to have a college football playoff because not all the Power Five conferences were participating for the full season?
I mean, yeah, Alabama will just claim another national championship and everybody will be fine, right, Marquise?
Claiming what? We don't claim national championships. Yeah. All we do is win. Yeah.
Okay, DJ Khaled.
I think there are a few that might be up in question.
Allegedly. Always follow it up with allegedly, my guy. Don't just be claiming stuff like that, Chase. That is reckless.
We'd be going back into the 80s and 90s of, you know, the AP and coaches poll determining, you know, who was the champion. But these are all the different layers of the college football and the college athletics aspect of this that don't necessarily apply to the professional sports.
Right. And that, and I guess I didn't think about that right away. You know, when all this, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that we didn't think about right away when this all started, but you know, cause at one point I was like, well, if the NFL or MLB or, you know, if they can come up with a, you know, a neutral site place, not the NFL, but if the MLB can come up with like a neutral site place and, you know, have extended spring training essentially and play games like that, then why can't college football come up with that kind of plan? Well, it's bigger levels because they're not professionals. They're student athletes. You have kids on campus that you have to think about. And when Rick Stockstill came on our show and said, you know, the thing that keeps coming to my mind, and I'm paraphrasing, if it's not safe for the fans or to be in the stands or the students to be on campus, then why is it safe for these guys that are tackling each other and going to be laying on top of each other playing football? Why is it safe for them? And he's absolutely right. So those are the things that keep coming to mind. Now, to your point, to wrap this up, if the SEC, if all 14 schools are good to go and the SEC could play, I believe what then happens is, well, let's say the Pac-12 comes out and they go, hey, we're good. We're ready to rock. Everybody's cool. It's moved out of California. We're feeling fine. We're going to be good to start our season. Well, then the SEC and the Pac-12 all of a sudden start talking. And then Conference USA comes out and the Sun Belt or, you know, some of the group of five come out and say, yep, all our schools are ready. We're good. They just all get together. That's probably what ends up happening, whether it's right or wrong or indifferent. But well, I think that probably is what happens.
The Big Ten, I think, is the biggest domino in that specific conversation because Pennsylvania has been hit hard. I think they are the sixth highest in coronavirus cases in America. Ohio has been hit hard with it. Michigan has been hit hard with it. And we all know where Rutgers is in New Jersey, that area has been hit the hardest by far in the U.S. So, you know, I read yesterday that the state of Iowa has seen a big spike in cases of coronavirus, and obviously you have the Hawkeyes there. So I think the Big Ten is a huge part of this. And, you know, I get where James Franklin is coming from with what he's saying. I think it's definitely coach speak. You know, to wrap this up with Greg Sankey, if I were Greg Sankey and you don't have anything definitive from the NCAA, and neither of us would be surprised if the NCAA didn't really have their act together, you know, before some of these decisions had to be made, then I could see Greg Sankey saying, screw it. What we're going to do is we're going to have a 10-game season with all conference games, and we're going to determine a champion. And if the rest of the conferences want to follow suit, then so be it. But we are going to capitalize on the money at stake and have games on CBS, games on ESPN. You know, at that point, then they have to determine whether fans are in the stands or not. But, you know, I think the SEC at that point would just move forward. That's just a guess. That is a pure guess on my behalf. But I think they would be, you know, if it's safe for the schools to be open, and the CDC approves it, then why not at least have some sort of college football from your conference and deliver a sense of normalcy to everyone in the South?
Yeah, and I have more on this because you've opened up, like I said, you opened up a can of worms, and so I do have more on this. I know we got to move on, but I
continue it.
Okay, let's do that on the other side, because I have another theory that I want to throw out to you that really just, like, literally just came in my mind a couple of minutes ago while you were talking. So we'll do that when we come back here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Do you own or manage a small business? Are you open and want to let people know about that? Then Free Business Friday on ESPN 102.5 The Game is for you. Tomorrow we are offering free advertising to local businesses that are safely open and working. This is a no-cost, no-catch offer. Visit thegamenashville.com/FBF for more information. Free Business Friday is our way of supporting small businesses as we get through this together. From your friends at ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson, ready to burn it down as we continue this college football discussion. So I said that, and we were going to go somewhere else, Ryan. We were going to, you know, move on from this, but, and you can weigh in on the text line or call us 615-737-1025. This is a theory that popped in my head while you were talking. Let's say that the SEC, a majority of the schools are good to go. And I'm going to use one school in particular that says, hey, we're not going to play. We can't play. And they're right here in Nashville. Vanderbilt, right in the middle of things. Vanderbilt University Medical Center. And they're like, we can't. We're not going to be able to. So, but everybody else, all right, good to go. The Big Ten, you got about three schools. Penn State's one of them. Hey, we're fine. We're ready. But a majority of that conference can't play. Not there yet. What if you had Greg Sankey of the SEC, you had some other conference commissioners, they got together, they talked, and they just said, hey, we're going to make an agreement for this year that we're going to just erase the conference lines and build, you know, maybe the Penn State comes and plays a lot of the SEC schools, and that's how they start. And I knew you kind of went there. You were kind of throwing that out, but more in conference. But what if just some of the conferences basically merged for a year and they figured it out that way?
Whew. Hadn't thought about that.
You have some power conferences. Because of what we just discussed, you don't have a college football commissioner. You don't have one person calling the shots. You are relying on conference commissioners. So hypothetically, they have to figure this out. Unless somebody else just steps up and does it for them. But what if?
So let me throw this bone into your theory. If, you know, kind of going back to what I was saying earlier, if let's say six Big Ten schools were open for class, but the rest were not open at the start of when college football is scheduled for Labor Day weekend. Let's just use that as an example. And they were to move forward with your theory with, you know, the SEC taking a handful of Big Ten schools for 2020 only. Well, what do you do if, say, Michigan doesn't start on Labor Day weekend, but they're open on October 1?
Huh?
Do you have to determine by a certain date whether that school is playing college football or another sport? Let's say hypothetically by August 1. By August 1, you have to determine whether Michigan, Michigan State, Northwestern, whatever the schools are. I'm just using them as examples. Do you have to determine by a drop-dead date whether a school is going to partake in fall sports? And if they're not ready to say yes by that point, then even if the school reopens in October, they can't just jump in and catch a moving train in the middle of the college football season. And at that point, then the SEC and Big Ten can start scheduling out-of-conference games, and including the Big Ten within some of those SEC teams, and then maybe the SEC can fill out their schedule to, you know, 12 games, and they can play some Big Ten schools.
Yeah. I mean, you bring up a very, very good point. While I was coming up with the big SEC, where it just means more to dream big, that's going to be their tagline. But I look, yeah, I mean, if Michigan on October 1 is like, hey, we're good, where do we go? What do we do? I think you do have to set a date. I mean, the NCAA was very quick, and rightfully so, now looking back on it, but they were very quick to just axe spring sports altogether. And go ahead and cancel those seasons and championships, and, you know, well before we really knew the extent of this. I mean, that was pretty fast. It was right after the NCAA tournament that, you know, spring sports are done. So there, it's not like they're opposed to setting a date or making that sort of decision at some point, but it's just got to be uniformed. I mean, it's got to happen. I don't know if you do things
in... They have to have things in writing for these college commissioners.
Sure.
The NCAA has to basically, if it's an all or nothing deal, then that makes it easy for fall sports. As unlikely as that could become if it was all or nothing, then that, look, if Rutgers then isn't open, then there's no college football season if the NCAA goes with the all or nothing plan. If they have things written in stone that, hey, if you're in a conference and let's say in the SEC, if 12 of your schools are in, then we will redo the conference schedule, or Greg Sankey's staff will redo the conference schedule and you guys are allowed to play. If it's less than 12, then you can't do it. If they were to go case by case with the conferences and do that, just something. That's what I think James Franklin is asking for, and that's what I'm saying needs to happen for this thing to not become a complete mess later this summer and into early fall.
Well, college football and the NCAA in general is already a cluster, but I mean, this would just add to it. I'm kind of sitting here working through this and thinking, okay, could they do, let's say that they start Labor Day weekend with, just for argument's sake, half the SEC, half the Big Ten, they get together and form this conference, and they start then. Well, then the other half of both conferences are ready to go by October 1. Could you have like two separate seasons, and then I don't know how that would work. I from crowning a champion, I just don't know how that's feasible. You're just essentially playing games. Which from a financial standpoint would be fine. Now there are big TV deals with the bowls and the college football playoff, obviously. But if you're thinking about this from an institutional standpoint and your finances, if you're playing games, no matter when they are, I mean, that's, you know, an 8-game schedule is better than nothing. So you're still getting some of that TV revenue. Now, if you don't have fans, you're missing out on that. Nobody's going to get rich here, but that I, you know, as I work through this in my head, that goes back to the conversation of how it affects other sports.
Well, Chris on the text line throws in another layer to this that is, it just makes it even more of a mess. And his question is perfectly valid. Chris's question on the text line is, quote, is it necessary for college football to have fans in the stands? Because if they're keeping fans out of the stands, then how do fans' lives take precedence over players' lives as far as the buyers is concerned? So this is another layer that the pro sports have an advantage over the college sports, where they have a players association that can agree with the league on what steps the league is going to take to complete, say, the NHL 2019-20 season or start the MLB season for 2020. And whether the salaries are impacted or not for the baseball players, the hockey players, or a different professional sport, the Players Association can come to an agreement and then approach the NHL or the MLB in these two cases. If you're like, obviously these players aren't earning salaries, they're not getting paid. So is it just the NCAA saying, look, we're open for business, we want to play fall sports, athletes, you got to do it. And then it's up to the athletes of whether or not they're individually going to say, you know what, I don't feel safe doing this, especially if you're not allowing fans to attend games, then why are we allowed to sweat on each other on the field?
Yeah.
That's where it becomes an even bigger mess that Chris on the text line, you know, wisely brings up.
No, for sure. I completely get that. I mean, that goes back to what I was saying that Coach Stockstill from MTSU said. So, I get that. It just, there are a lot of questions that are being raised that are connected just to this situation, but also to college sports as a whole, of things that we have all known that have been problems that haven't been addressed. And now this is such a big situation that I believe they're going to be forced to address these problems, you know, i.e. having a college football commissioner, having somebody that kind of, I don't want to say dictate, but is the Roger Goodell of college football. And you don't just have these individual conferences, because you're going to have, and you're always going to have different ideas. You're always going to have people that aren't on the same page. But if you have one singular voice that can basically say, nope, we're going to make the decision, we're going to do this, I think that that would make things a little bit better. So I do wonder if that's one of the positives that comes from this, that at some point, you know, they get a little more uniformed in how they do things. I think that would be better for everyone. Quickly, before we get to the break, Greg wants to weigh in on this. Greg, welcome into the Rundown.
Hey, guys. One quick point or question. Everybody sees this from the college side. What about the player side? Say school A and B can go, and they decide they're going to go and play their team. But C can't, but they have a player that has to go to the NFL.
Greg, you're breaking up, and I hate to do that, but yeah, we couldn't understand you. You're going. I liked where you were going. You sounded like you had a good point, but you were breaking up. But yeah, look, that's another thing that you gotta talk about, is the player side of, you know, if one school can go and the other one can't, you know, what does that mean? It just creates a whole big mess. So that also leans me towards the whole all or nothing thing to make everything fair, but nothing's going to be fair in this. That's just how it's going to be.
But
a little bit of new. Go ahead.
One last question on that, because sure. This is going to be something that a lot of the national media would go up in arms about if it's all or nothing. And I'm using Rutgers as an example. If Rutgers isn't open, and Rutgers of all schools is preventing college football from happening in 2020. There would be a lot of people around America that, yes, they understand everything going on with COVID, but if the other schools can play, but that one school can't, and that prevents everything, it is a mess, and I wish there was a college football commissioner that could help unify this entire deal.
Yeah, and let me be clear. I don't think that they should do the all or nothing thing. I don't think you can. I don't think that really would solve anything. It would just make even more problems. News coming out about the city of Nashville. We'll tell you that on the other side. It's the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren Donick and Chase coming up at the top of the hour. So, Ryan, a little bit of news coming out as Nashville Mayor John Cooper addressing the media right now. He announced that phase one of the city's four-phase plan to reopen will begin Monday, May 11th, so that is this Monday. He did that this morning during his daily coronavirus task force briefing. So we've been wondering, as the rest of the state has started to reopen, Nashville and other counties, this of course being Davidson County, have been doing their own thing because there are more populated areas, and so it's been up to the mayor. And Mayor Cooper had announced this four-phase plan that was laid out. Now we're going to enter phase one starting on Monday. So the reopening is beginning for the city of Nashville. So this is good news. This is good news for our city that phase one now will begin starting May 11th. So,
and to be specific, Davidson County.
Yeah, Davidson County. That's right. That's I say Nashville, but I mean Metro Nashville, Davidson County. So that will not necessarily put us on the same pace as the rest of the state, but in our area now the process will begin. So definitely something to keep an eye on here in the coming days as we get ready to reopen.
Yeah, one other thing before we move on to the NFL schedule that I want to give a shout out to the Nashville Electric Service, because they were hit with a ton of outages, record outages. And as of late last night, the outages have decreased down to 12,000. So,
yeah,
you know, and that's just in a short amount of time. They had to call on crews from other states to come in and help. And, you know, they had over 100,000 outages Sunday and Monday. So kudos to NES for all their hard work.
Yeah, they've been awesome, and really appreciate their hard work. I stopped myself because I almost said they've been powering through, and that would have been a terrible pun, and I wouldn't have meant it. But I really appreciate all the hard work.
My appreciation of dad jokes, how I appreciate dad jokes, I would have really appreciated that
one. I know. You're not even a dad yet, and you love a good dad joke.
Oh, I love dad jokes.
Real quick, so this has been one of those shows where you have a plan, and we've kind of deviated from the plan, which those are fun. So the college football discussion is just a fascinating one. But the NFL schedule will be released tonight. Jared Stillman and I are going to be on the air starting at 7 to break that down as it comes out. At 6 o'clock, though, if you missed our game night Facebook Live, Teron Davenport, yours truly, and former Titans wide receiver Nate Washington, you can hear that from 6 to 7 leading into our scheduled show. So that will be fun. But the NFL schedule will come out later tonight. I have set the over-under for the Titans in primetime games at 2.5. That's what I think it'll be. I will take slightly over because I say 3, but I said 2.5 just to play it safe because who knows what the NFL is thinking with Tennessee, but they did go to the AFC Championship game. So I would think that they get maybe 3. I would say one of each, Thursday, Monday, and Sunday.
Okay. They have been hesitant over the years, even when the Titans have been good, to put them in prime time. However,
especially on NBC.
Correct. On, you know, Sunday Night Football. But they do have a pretty loaded schedule in terms of brand names, either coming here or going on the road. They host the Steelers. They travel to Green Bay. They travel to Baltimore. If I had to guess, Titans at Ravens will be prime time when the schedule comes out tonight.
I think that's Sunday night. I think that's a Sunday night game.
I would love that. Titans Ravens Sunday night, that would be really cool.
Door slide in. Ah.
Yeah. But an interesting nugget came out yesterday from John Clayton is the NFL is going to front load the schedule with AFC-NFC matchups in the first 4 weeks. So the Titans will face the NFC North in weeks 1 through 4. So that would be Minnesota, Green Bay, Detroit, Chicago. Minnesota and Green Bay are road games. Chicago and Detroit are home games. And they are doing so, you would think, in case they have to push back the start of the season into October, then it can all be within the conferences that they play those games.
That makes sense. Okay. All right. Okay, because at first I'm like, why does that matter? I don't really understand. Now I do. Okay, that makes a ton of sense that they're going to do it that way because you don't necessarily have to have the AFC-NFC matchups.
And like you said, 7 o'clock tonight, you and Jared Stillman from 7 to 8 breaking down the Titans 2020 schedule and the 2020 NFL special brought to you by Bojangles.
Yes, so appreciate Bojangles for coming on board. It's always bow time for me. So that will be a lot of fun. Tune in 6 o'clock for the game night and then 7 o'clock for the scheduled release. That's going to do it for us, though, Ryan. We'll be back at it tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Hard to believe it's already almost Friday. But stick around. Darren Donick and Chase is next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.